Good morning. Again, it's always a little awkward when we have new people here. You know, some of them may be experienced in Buddhism, maybe Zen Buddhism. So it always sort of causes me to reevaluate what I'm going to talk about, which is nice, because generally speaking, what I put down doesn't make any sense anyway. But actually, what I'd wanted to do, because of where we have been going and the way we've been practicing lately, I wanted to reinforce, you know, how we prepare to actually sit Zazen and how we enter into a Zazen. And for the new people here, again, I'll give a definition of Zazen. It just means the way of sitting. See, Zen, the way, Zazen, the way of sitting. And true Buddha Dharma, see, has nothing whatsoever to do with sitting. See, people get caught up in the thing and saying, well, this is, now I'm practicing Buddha Dharma. No, I'm sitting. I can walk around and practice Buddha Dharma. I can lie down and practice Buddha Dharma. As a matter of fact, if I know what practice means, see, it's impossible to leave the place of practice. But for the main part, we really don't grasp what it is. So sitting is the easiest way to begin to watch the functioning of the mind. And when we start to sit, the mind we're talking about is the egocentric mind. This is the mind that you're aware of right now, behind your eyes, talking to yourself, see, making comments, judging. See, this is the mind, we'll call it the mind of passion. This is the mind that is involved always in critical comment or continuously complimenting yourself. See, this and all of this, see, is nothing but the egocentric mind. And that egocentric mind that you live in continuously, when you get out and get in your car, the longtime students here should be fully aware of this, but those of you who aren't, when you get in your car and you drive out, and you push the old thermometer down to where it's, speedometer down to where it's hitting 60 and 70, and you enter into your dream world. Realize you're living in a real hazardous place. You're fantasizing while you're traveling at 60 and 70 miles an hour. And if you haven't watched yourself do that, that's even more frightening, because you really have very, very limited contact with the way we're behaving. And this is the reality of samsara. And samsara, as the Buddha, see, found out, is suffering. What is samsara? That's the daily life that turns around you. See, the activities. And Buddha said, that is a place of suffering. And we've been talking about Musō Sōseki, and we'll get to him a little bit later in this talk. But he points out, see, the whole idea behind our practice is to free ourselves from the constraints of the egocentric mind. See, this mind that constantly churns and turns. See, the mind that constantly judges. The mind that lives in continuous fear. See, am I liked? Am I not liked? Am I approved of? Am I not approved of? Am I smart? Am I dumb? See, it restricts us. And Musō, see, his whole point behind the practice. And he says, and this is quite beautiful, he said, there is a vast potential latent within human beings. A potential. And this potential, see, is more than anything that you can conceptualize. See, the mind that conceptualizes is restricted, it is limited, and it keeps you trapped in a world of pain and suffering. And by the way, the egocentric mind, which is this sense of self that you have, that I'm here somehow, behind my eyes, inside my body, I feel I'm here. So you're trapped in the six senses, the seeing, the hearing, the smelling, the tasting, the touching, the thinking. See, and that gives rise to this sense of you being separate. See, and that is an illusion. And caught in that kind of thinking, it's called delusion. Or in the three poisons, we call it ignorance. See, because it isn't in contact with reality. You are not separate from the environment that you inhabit. And the old masters are aware of this. See, and he tells us, see, that there is a potential within that skin bag. See, There's a potential there. And it's latent within human beings that remains undiscovered because of the limitations placed on consciousness by habitual preoccupations. See, you're continuously in your fantasy world. See, and you should begin in Zazen, see, to allow a gap to develop there. See, when we begin to practice, and sitting like this becomes very difficult at first, because we are so caught in our mind, the expectation. If we have a deep aspiration to practice, and some of us come with that, see, we're compelled to be here. Then the moment I sit down, I hear about these wonderful states that we can experience in meditation. We can hear about satori, enlightenment. Then I sit down and I start to practice, see, and I practice in a very coarse, mechanical way. See, now I've got it. Is anything happening? See, and you will sit there waiting for something to happen. And some of us sit for a long time. Ish and I just happened to look in that direction. See, we will sit trapped by that expectation. And that is a barrier that we have to release. We have to move through. And sitting practice is the best and easiest way for us to begin to see how we function. And as you sit there, see, a gap begins to develop between this ruminating mind. See, and he calls it the consciousness by habitual preoccupation. He said, the recommendation that all cravings be relinquished does not mean that detachment itself is a goal. See, the recommendation, we're recommending, see, that we detach from the flow of the egocentric mind. We can make that separation. This mind, this egocentric mind that we're talking about, it has to have movement. See, and you think about it right now. See, are you totally pinned in on this talk? Nothing else is going on. See? But what's happening is that all sorts of thoughts are moving. See, so when we sit down and we'll follow the instructions for the first 14 or 15 seconds. See? Count your breath. I wonder if this is going to be boring. Well, nothing seems to be happening. Maybe if I try to breathe a little faster. See, you're caught, that mind constantly moving. Or, see, if you're forced to sit for longer periods of time, well, let's just drift off into the past and, oh, if only this wouldn't have happened. If that wouldn't, see, I'm in that fantasy there. I exhaust that because it's nothing but a fantasy in my head. Then what do? You flash forward. And you begin, see, to project, when my ship comes in, when I become a star, when the perfect lover comes by, if I can get just that perfect automobile. See, and then when you exhaust yourself with that, because it's just in your head, you're not going to get out and get inside that new car or that beautiful home, or the casting agent isn't going to call you up for the next lead. See, it's all in your head. So at some point you exhaust that, and what do? You flip back to the past. Now all of us who have sat here for any length of time should be aware of that, and watch how often we still go to it. We still go to it because we believe in it. See, well, I deserve, because just sitting here trying to do nothing but counting my breath is difficult. It becomes painful. Well, let's have another little fantasy. Gee, that was a nice-looking guy I saw the other day. See? And then to the future. Well, there we are. Six children, house in the hills. See? Then into the past. That, I know you don't do that, do you, Cogan? See? But the mind has that movement. Past, future, past, future, past, future. Watch yourself carefully. Where does it never stop? Right here in the center. See, you're in the past, fantasizing, daydreaming, reliving, bitching and moaning to the therapist about how your parents treated you or how you weren't appreciated at work. See, all of that's just junk in your head. And each time you go over, you reinforce it. And if there's therapists here, forgive us. We got therapists here who are priests also. And my degrees are in the field. So I'm not deliberately taking a shot at them. Or not straight on. If I hit him with a ricochet, that's okay. See, over and over and over. Do you know how much you relive everything, see, in the past? That's the way the ruminating works. And the beautiful part about it is if you can see this, and I think even with discriminating consciousness. See, let's say you're bitching and moaning that your parents didn't appreciate you when you were 7 or 8. See, might be valid. You don't know. Because now 30 or 40 years have passed. You don't remember the actual incident. You're remembering the memory of a memory of a memory of a memory. And depending on how obsessed with it you are, it could be literally millions of reflections. And you're going to work with that. And you do work with it. And what happens is to get the juice into it, the pain, and that wonderful sense of being a victim. See, no, great. See, ah, shit, if they only knew. See, it's junk. You're playing in your memories. And it never brings about resolution. Cannot. Because you are no longer 7 or 8. And in all likelihood, your parents might not even be there. You're not going to resolve anything by playing in the past. Give it up. In Zen, they say, cut it. See? Then I go to the future and I fantasize. See? And you know what I'm talking about. How many of you go to bed at night and start your fantasies? How things are going to be. It is never going to be that way. How is it going to be? Just like this. What comes up in front of you is always the way it is. And we'll talk about that as being pure. See, pure in that if you do not project out from that crazy egocentric mind that plays in the past, fantasizes the future, if you stay in the here and the now, see, and in a way they call it mirror samadhi, but in a way, if you simply reflect what's there the way a mirror doesn't judge what's in front of you. Say, well, if I don't judge, how will I know? You will know. You will know. See, don't worry about that. If I'm in this wonderful state of samadhi where I simply look out here and see how things are, and in the state of samadhi, I am not making the discrimination, see, between self and other. And I simply see how things are. Not the way my egocentric mind wants me to see it. But if I see it as it truly is, see, then I can actually do good. See, it's not on my personal agenda. See, I simply take care of what needs to be taken care of. If something needs to be picked up, I pick it up. If something needs to be put down, I put it down. And what's remarkable, see, is that an amazing new relationship with life develops. It truly does. And this is the point, see, is to free ourselves from that. Remember that egocentric mind, the basic ground of it, when you look at yourself, the basic ground of the egocentric mind is fear. And how much fear do you live in? See, and that fear gives rise to all sorts of things. It brings up this greed and this anger. And this constantly causes an ongoing pain. Musso said at one point, or was it Yang Wu, he said, you know, in this discriminating consciousness, in this egocentric mind, there are these moments of diversion, these moments of pleasure. See, but they're short-lived. But see, the pain and suffering of this delusional plane, see, is long-lived. And the interesting part, your life, see, is headed toward pain and suffering. You can't avoid it. Oh, yes, I can. You're not going to grow old and get sick and die? Well, then you're going to have real abrupt, because at a very young age, you're going to get sick and die. See, that's the end game. And see, that's what Buddha saw. He said, boy, if this is the end game for a human being, I don't know why I want to play in a game where it's stacked against you. It's lose. See? None of you are going to have this eternal life. See, we think when we're young. See, we cannot conceive of our own. Where's Shindai?
He's sick.
He's in where?
He's sick.
Oh, okay. See, his niece, 23 years old, passed away. We had as one of the monks here. See, his cousin passed away, 24. This crazy world of samsara is pain and suffering. And most of us come to the practice because we begin to become sick of suffering. And we intuitively can sense that the Buddha's path and his story, there is an opportunity here to find our way out, see, of the labyrinth of the egocentric mind. And if I can do that, lo and behold, a most amazing thing occurs. Now, the neat part about this is the whole product that you have to work with is you. See, you don't have to go out and buy a whole new you. See, it's just you. And the work that you do is very simple. You don't have to go to college. You don't have to get a degree. You don't have to learn a new vocabulary. You don't have to be licensed. See, you simply turn the mind in on itself. And how do we do that? There are techniques that we use, and that actually was where I wanted to jump into here. See, when we enter into Zen meditation, into Zazen, see, it is also important, and this is primarily for the senior people here. See, how you go about your day-to-day activities. See, do you continuously try to wake up, be in the now? Do you continuously, as my teacher said, act as if I'm enlightened? That means that we tread gently. See, that if we cause conflict, that we immediately take responsibility. See, and we apologize. It means that we try to carry with ourselves a grace and a dignity in all things that we do. We try, see, to put our personal agendas secondary. And the interesting part, if you make just that much effort, a remarkable change takes place. And for the new people here, there are people in this room that will tell you that. And it can almost seem magical. See, once you're not dominated and controlled by the fearful, egocentric mind, see, because, oh my God, if I'm not guarding my things continuously, see, something terrible will happen. See, somebody came in today and just talked about, I just want to feel safe. In the world of samsara, there is no safety. See, geez, we got some folks in here. Even if you had stacked up a lot of cash, you don't have so much anymore. And give a few more months, you may have nothing. You may be over here saying, Yogan, can I live in the dorm? But there have been the old masters of the past who lived on the streets. And they marveled in the wonder of what it is. That's what he's saying. He said, the recommendation that all cravings, give up these expectations, give up this need to live in a fantasy world in your head, start waking up in the now, being clear, here, now. Then he said, the detachment is simply a means. When we caught, and all of our techniques are simply a means. Detachment isn't the goal. See, my teacher would say, and Buddha Dharma is often misinterpreted to mean desires. You have to give up having any desires and become a zombie. My teacher said, if you practice that way, you have a bad practice. He said he has lots of desires. First off, he desires, see, to save all of those who are suffering. He desires to build a place where people who are tired of the storm of samsara can come and use the raft, see, a Buddha Dharma, to cross the insanity of samsara. I have lots of desires. Just don't be attached. That's all. Don't be attached, he would say in another wonderful way. Don't pick it up if you can't put it down. See, don't become an addict. And we are addicts. You're addicted. See, to your thoughts, to your fantasies. And have you ever noticed anything? This is what, I got very bored with myself. You don't even come up with real innovative new, you live in the same one. You just dress it up a little differently, don't you? Put a different hat on it. Spin it a little. You don't. We're not even imaginative in our delusions. And I used to get so sick of it. I'd come in, I'd sit down. Oh, no, please don't go there again. Let's not just do that, see. But you have to sit there and grind, see, until you break the habitual patterns. We do that in Zazen. We can start by our daily activities. See, my teacher said, no self-deception, don't deceive yourself. See, know exactly what it is you're doing. Know exactly when you're selfish. Know exactly when you're insensitive. And it's painful to admit that to yourself. It's very painful. But to yourself, it isn't confessional to me. And for God's sake, don't come here ever and think, well, I'll just go in and confess to Nyogen because I'm really bored by your confessions. See, it just doesn't interest me at all. See, but to yourself, see, to yourself, don't deceive yourself. That's the worst kind of thing. And then don't make an excuse. If you are upset, it's because you've allowed yourself to be upset. It isn't out here. See, right now you're sitting in behind your eyes. See? And you, if you can stay in a state of samadhi, which means non-distracted awareness, that's all it means. See? Non-distracted awareness. You're not caught in the picking and choosing mind. See, then whatever I say to you won't be insulting, because you're not integrating it. You're not bringing it into a conceptual understanding. See, and then reacting to, well, what does he mean by that? See, you, amazing. It's a cute story. Once I gave a talk here, and I was actually scolding somebody. And I thought she said, didn't say anything. Later that afternoon, I get a phone call from her. She's crying. And she said, well, I know you were talking about me. Well, I wasn't. But I thought, well, that's still nice. You took it that way. But I wasn't talking about her. See? But again, see, that's really looking at yourself. Understand, right behind your eyes now, if I call you a dirty SOB, you have to give weight to it. You show me where it's meaning. What does it mean? What is its meaning? You're assigning meaning to it. You're taking it, internalizing it, and then what are you doing? You're chewing on it. And then you're imagining more things about it. See, that's, don't make an excuse for yourself. If you're in anger, if you're churning and turning, it's because you're allowing it to be done. If you're in a state of samadhi, non-distracted awareness, see, you just listen to the stuff. And it just floats through, just words. See, after I throw out some crazy words, and I throw out a lot of crazy words, see, then I ask you, pick them up, let's see them, let's work with them, let's see what it is that's so terrible. She's just great. She immediately starts looking elsewhere. See, but it's true. Think about what we do. Now, don't make an excuse. If you're upset, you're upset. Don't blame someone out there. It's you. You have full control of yourself. That's what he's talking about. He's saying if you can break through this self-imposed restrictions, you're doing it to yourself. Self-imposed restrictions. And then you'll open up this inexhaustible treasury of potential. And they all talk about it, see. This treasure. What is here that is so amazing? See, one of the things is that this Buddha mind, freed from this, when you allow yourself just to become empty, mirror-like, sitting here, see, not thinking, just sitting here. See, you don't go deaf. See, you don't go dumb. You don't go blind. See, you're just not following the ruminating thoughts, and you're not trying to suppress thoughts. See, that's where the very critical difference in sitting. It is, I'm not trying to not think. That just causes an explosion of thought. See, it becomes effortless that I just sit here like this. Then, this basic ground, see, is compassion. That's one of the manifestations on that altar. See, that's the Kuan Yin on this side. See, pure compassion. See, and in the world of selfless compassion, there is no fear. Can you imagine living in a world where you have no fear? See, we'll have a lot of machos. Oh, I don't have any fear. Until you go to bed alone at night. See, then the demons come in. See, but can you imagine what it is to have no fear? And can you imagine how you can work in the world? See, because there are so many things out there that are frightened, that are in pain. See, and you can see it in so many ways. And if you actually enter into this great field of compassion, samadhi, see, you will experience things in ways that you never have experienced. And the people here know. We just, those of you who haven't seen, Mani is, you see his picture downstairs? He's quite happy, see. We had a rooster that sought refuge here. And Doman has seen him, see, in fear, and people trying to kill him, putting dogs on him and stoning him. And he'd come here and shake. And he would come here because he found sanctuary and safety. And we took him in. And the most amazing thing when you hung out with this rooster, you won't think of a chicken. So you go in, flop him in the skillet and cook him all up. This rooster has intelligence. This rooster could develop affection. We have a little lady in the back, Soko, that they became such buddies. See, when she'd go out to garden, he would walk right along with her. And true story, see, she'd sit down on her bench and she'd sit there and he would jump up on the bench beside her and then he'd lean on her. And if she wouldn't pay attention, he'd peck on her. See? And then a very cute, some of you didn't hear it, saw the pictures that Doman has some pictures of Manny with sitting with some hens, see, and how wonderful for him this rooster and these hens. And I said, and he seems to have, I told Soko, and I said, Soko, and he seems to have a lot of hen friends around him. And she said, well, of course, he's a very good-looking rooster. See, that kind of sensitivity to life, that's what I mean. Don't act in coarse ways, so you prepare. See, and then when we begin to sit, it's necessary that you make your body comfortable. See, we can already see, for those of us who don't practice, it's uncomfortable to sit like this. And when you're at home to practice, sit in a comfortable way. I will guarantee you that eventually this will become a very, very comfortable way to sit. And it is the best way when we begin to sit for long periods of time. But for some people, they can never. See, the muscles, the tendons don't stretch out. So we'll go up into a chair. That's why we have chairs sitting around. Don't get trapped in being macho, that I have to do something. That's the egocentric mind. You're not in here to compete with anyone. See, you're here to be comfortable, to work on yourself. That's what he talked about. To work on yourself. See, to see beyond the delusional thought. See, of the egocentric mind. See, this should be so encouraging for those of you who are sick of being frightened, who are sick of fear, sick, see, of anger. See, you don't need some sort of a big new program. You need to sit down, get quiet, and turn the light of the mind inward. And we've been doing this for 2,500 years. And it's as vital today as it was when the Shakyamuni. How would you like to be invested, have stock in a company that's 2,500 years old and still is vital? Wouldn't that be amazing, see? Well, you do. And this is what he said. This treasure opens up. And I will tell you when it's a scream what it does, and they all tell you, you can transcend birth and death. But it's not easy. You have to give up this egocentric mind. See, the point is to sit comfortably. See, if you need to sit in a chair, fine. See, sit in a chair. The point is to sit comfortably, not endure excessive physical pain. Now, whenever we sit quietly for any length of time, in the beginning stages, because of this ruminating mind, see, it's monkey mind jumping all around, our bodies are completely connected. See, and we begin to experience physical discomfort. We can experience considerable pain by simply sitting quietly. See, the body isn't used to it. The egocentric mind isn't used to it. And the old masters will say that when you sit down in Zazen, it's like chaining a monkey to a post. What is the monkey? That's that mind jumping around. It's chaining it to a post. So you put it here and you sit. See? And hopefully, see, your aspiration, your vow, is that you are sick of sickness. And I will sit until I can break through this egocentric barrier, this shell that I'm enclosed in. And it literally is like a shell. See, they'll talk about this skin bag of the six senses. So you feel, you're sitting in there. See, some of the old masters say, you're sitting there in a cave of hell. See, don't you see that? You're sort of looking out. You're inside there. See, that's delusion. Because that isn't the way it is. And that's not even the way it is to the scientific community. See, if you feel so set on, yes, well, I am separate, just see what the contemporary scientists, the physicists are talking about. See, the atoms that are being exchanged and moved, see. I saw, and I've said this several times, but the new one, see, this just most recently the one guy was saying that the atoms in your body, the very same atoms, have made up all of the famous people of the past. The very same atoms. And these atoms, see, all of this movement here, see, this isn't just blank nothingness. And it moves in and out. And you can really sense that when you can smell odors or you can hear sounds. Where are they heard? In deep enough samadhi. See, you'll hear them right in the center of your very being. See, that's deep samadhi. And people have heard it here. When the mockingbird starts to sing. And it isn't something you hear out there. It's here in the very center of you. That's that Buddha mind. See, that's the enlightened state. See, and if I can leave this ruminating mind alone, I begin to experience my life in that way. And when you hear that, there isn't an outside or an inside. See, and this illusion of separation drops. And when that does, you enter into a world of oneness, see, which is true reality.